is hard at work in the development department. Though most systems are fully formed, there's still plenty of maturing to do. The digestive system is beginning to practice contraction movements, so your baby will be able to eat. The bone marrow is making white blood cells, so your baby will be able to fight off all those germs passed around the playgroup. And the pituitary gland at the base of the brain has started producing hormones, so your baby will one day be able to make babies. Week 13. As your first trimester comes to a close, your fetus, who seems to be working its way through the produce section, has reached the size of a lemon, about 3 inches long. Your baby's head is now about half the size of his or her crown-to-rump length, but that cute little body is picking up steam and will continue growing over time. At birth, your baby will be one-quarter head, three-quarters body. Meanwhile, your baby's intestines, which have been growing inside the umbilical cord, are starting the trek to their permanent position in your baby's abdomen. Also developing this week, your baby's vocal cords, the better to cry with, soon.
Your body, the third month.
Here are some symptoms you may experience this month, or may not experience, since every pregnancy is different. Some of these symptoms may be continuing from last month, while others may be brand new. Physically, fatigue, lack of energy, sleepiness, frequent urination, nausea, with or without vomiting, excess saliva, constipation, heartburn, indigestion, flatulence, bloating, food aversions and cravings, increasing appetite, especially if morning sickness is easing. Breast changes continued. Visible veins on your abdomen, legs, and elsewhere as your blood supply pumps up. Slight increase in vaginal discharge. Occasional headaches. Occasional lightheadedness or dizziness. A little more rounding of your belly. Your clothes feeling a little snugger. Emotionally. Continued emotional ups and downs, which may include mood swings, irritability, irrationality, weepiness. Joy, excitement, apprehension, doubts, any or all. A new sense of calm. Still, a sense of unreality about the pregnancy. Is there really a baby in there?
Your body this month. This month, your uterus is a little bigger than a grapefruit, and your waist may start to thicken. By the end of the month, your uterus can be felt right above your pubic bone in the lower abdomen. If you'd like to see any of the illustrations from this chapter, you can download and print out a special PDF from the same Audible page where you purchased your audiobook. What you can expect at the third month checkup.
This month, you can expect your practitioner to check the following, though there may be variations depending on your particular needs and your practitioner's style of practice. Weight and blood pressure, urine for sugar and protein, fetal heartbeat, size of uterus by external palpation, feeling from the outside, height of fundus, the top of the uterus, hands and feet for swelling, and legs for varicose veins. Questions or problems you want to discuss, have a list ready.
What you may be wondering about, the third month.
Constipation.
I've been terribly constipated for the past few weeks. Is this common?
Irregularity, that bloated, gassy, clogged up feeling, is a very regular pregnancy complaint, and there are good reasons why. For one, the high levels of progesterone circulating in your expectant system cause the smooth muscles of the large bowel to relax, making them sluggish and allowing food to hang around longer in the digestive tract. The upside, there's added time for nutrients to be absorbed into your bloodstream, allowing more of them to reach your baby. The downside, you end up with what amounts to a waste product traffic jam, with nothing going anywhere anytime soon. Another reason for the clogged up works, your growing uterus puts pressure on the bowel, cramping its normal activity. So much for the process of elimination, at least as you once knew it. But you don't have to accept constipation as inevitable just because you're pregnant. Try these measures to combat your colon congestion and head off hemorrhoids, a common companion of constipation, especially during pregnancy. Fight back with fiber. You and your colon need about 25 to 35 grams of fiber daily. No need to actually keep count. Just focus on fiber-rich selections such as fresh fruit, but not bananas, which are constipating, and vegetables, raw or lightly cooked, with skin left on when possible. Whole grains, legumes, beans and peas, and dried or freeze-dried fruit. Going for the green can also help get things going. Look for it not only in the form of green vegetables, but in the juicy sweet kiwi, a tiny fruit that packs a potent laxative effect. If you've never been a big fiber fan, add these foods to your diet gradually, or you may find your digestive tract protesting loudly. But since flatulence is a common complaint of pregnancy, as well as a frequent but usually temporary side effect of a newly fiber-infused diet, you may find your digestive tract protesting for a while anyway. Really plugged up? You can try adding some bran or psyllium to your diet, starting with a sprinkle and working your way up as needed. Don't overdo these fiber powerhouses, though. As they move speedily through your system, they can carry away important nutrients before they've had the chance to be absorbed. Resist the refined. While high-fiber foods can help keep things moving, refined foods can clog things up. So steer clear of the refiner things in life, such as white bread and white rice. Drown your opponent. Constipation doesn't stand a chance against an ample fluid intake. Most foods, particularly water and juice, are effective in softening stool and keeping food moving along the digestive tract. Another time-honored way to get things moving? Turn to warm liquids, including that spa staple, hot water, and lemon. They'll help stimulate peristalsis, those intestinal contractions that help you go. Truly tough cases may benefit from that geriatric favorite, prune juice. When you gotta go, go. Holding in bowel movements regularly can weaken muscles that control them and lead to constipation. Timing can help avoid this problem. For example, have your high-fiber breakfast a little earlier than usual, so it will have a chance to kick in before you leave the house, instead of when you're in the car stuck in traffic. Don't max out at mealtime. Big meals can overtax your digestive tract, leading to more congestion. Opt for those 6 mini meals a day over 3 large ones. You'll also experience less gas and bloating. Check your supplements and medications. Ironically, many of the supplements that do a pregnant body good, prenatal vitamins, calcium, and iron supplements, can also contribute to constipation. Ditto every pregnant woman's best buddy, antacids. So talk to your practitioner about possible alternatives or adjustments in dosages or switching to a slow-release formula. Also ask your practitioner about taking a magnesium supplement to help fight constipation. Taking it at night may relax achy muscles and help you sleep better too. Go pro. Probiotics, aka good bacteria, may stimulate the intestinal bacteria to break down food better, aiding the digestive tract in its efforts to keep things moving. Enjoy probiotics in yogurt and yogurt drinks that contain active cultures. You can also ask your practitioner to recommend a good probiotic supplement in capsules, chewables, or a powder form that can be added to smoothies. Get a move on. An active body encourages active bowels. Even a brisk 10-minute walk can get things moving. So make sure you're getting the recommended amount of practitioner-approved exercise. One essential exercise for combating constipation, Kegels. These pelvic floor exercises can keep you regular when practiced regularly. If your anti-constipation campaign doesn't get things moving, consult your practitioner. He or she may prescribe a bulk-forming stool softener for occasional use. Don't use any laxative, including herbal remedies or castor oil, unless your practitioner specifically recommends it. Lack of constipation.
All my pregnant friends seem to have problems with constipation. I don't. In fact, I'm going more than ever. Is my system working right?
From the sound of things, your system couldn't be working better. Chances are your digestive efficiency is a credit to healthy eating and exercise habits. After all, consuming lots of fiber-rich foods like fruits, veggies, whole grains, and beans, drinking plenty of water, and staying or getting active can all combine to counteract the natural digestive slowdown of pregnancy and keep things moving smoothly. Sometimes a change for the healthier in eating habits can cause too much of a good thing, bowel movement-wise. Chances are production will slow down as you get used to the roughage stuff, as will the extra gas you may pass as a result of it. But you'll still stay regular. If your stools are very frequent, more than 3 a day, or watery, bloody, or mucousy, check with your practitioner. This kind of diarrhea could require prompt intervention during pregnancy.
Another reason for being tired, moody, and constipated. Have you been tired, moody, and constipated lately? Welcome to the Pregnancy Club. Surging gestational hormones trigger those pesky symptoms in most moms-to-be. But did you know that out-of-whack thyroid hormones can cause or intensify those very same symptoms, as well as many others common in pregnancy, including excessive weight gain, skin problems of all kinds, very dry or pimply, muscle aches and cramps, headaches, a decrease in libido, problems with memory and concentration, that foggy feeling, depression, and swelling of the hands and feet? The fact that so many symptoms of a thyroid condition overlap with symptoms of pregnancy make it an easy diagnosis to miss in a mom-to-be. Another common symptom, an increased sensitivity to cold, is more clear-cut during pregnancy since expectant moms tend to be warmer rather than chillier. Yet hypothyroidism, having too little thyroid hormone because of a sluggish thyroid-producing gland, which affects around 2 to 3% of expectant moms, can show up for the first time during pregnancy or in the postpartum period, and since it can, if untreated, lead to pregnancy problems, proper diagnosis and treatment are vital. Hyperthyroidism, when too much thyroid hormone is produced by an overactive gland, is seen less often in pregnancy, but it can also cause complications if left untreated. Symptoms of hyperthyroidism, many of which may also be hard to distinguish from pregnancy symptoms, include fatigue, insomnia, irritability, warm skin and sensitivity to heat, rapid heartbeat, and weight loss, or trouble gaining weight. If you're experiencing some or all of the symptoms of hypo or hyperthyroidism, especially if you have a family history of thyroid disease, check with your practitioner. A simple blood test can determine whether you have a thyroid condition that needs treating.
Gas.
I'm very bloated, and I'm passing gas all the time. Will I be this gassy the whole pregnancy?
Wondering if you'll ever run out of gas and the overwhelming need to pass it? Probably not, since pregnancy brings out the gas in just about every expectant mom. Happily, while endless flatulence can be endlessly embarrassing for you, especially when there's no dog nearby to blame, it's no problem at all for your baby. Snug and safe in a uterine cocoon that's protected on all sides by impact-absorbing amniotic fluid, your very little one is probably soothed by the bubbling and gurgling of your gastric muzak. Baby won't be happy, though, if bloating, which often worsens late in the day and, yes, generally persists throughout pregnancy, keeps you from eating regularly and well. To cut down on the sounds and smells from down under, and to make sure your nutritional intake doesn't take a hit, take the following measures. Stay regular. Constipation is a common cause of gas and bloating. Graze, don't gorge. Large meals just add to that bloated feeling. They also overload your digestive system, which isn't at its most efficient anyway in pregnancy. Instead of those 2 or 3 supersized squares, nibble on 6 mini meals. Don't gulp. When you rush through meals or eat on the fly, you're bound to swallow as much air as food. This captured air forms painful pockets of gas in your gut that will seek release the only way they know how. Keep calm, particularly during meals. Stress can cause you to swallow air, which can give you a tank full of gas. Taking a few deep breaths before meals may help you relax. Steer clear of gas producers. Your tummy will tell you what they are. Common offenders beyond the notorious beans include onions, cabbage, fried foods, sugary sweets, and carbonated beverages. Don't be quick to pop. Ask your practitioner before popping your usual anti-gas medications. Some are safe, others are not recommended, or any remedy, over-the-counter or herbal. Sipping a little chamomile tea, however, may safely soothe all kinds of pregnancy-induced indigestion. Ditto for hot water with lemon, which can cut through gas as well as any medication. Headaches.
I find that I'm getting a lot more headaches than ever before. Can I take something for them?
Pregnancy can be a headache. Make that a lot of headaches, especially once you discover that some of your go-to headache relievers are no-goes when you're expecting. And ironically, just when you're having more headaches than you've ever had before. Why the increase in headaches during pregnancy, even in women who haven't previously experienced a lot of everyday headaches? The number one culprit, and you've probably guessed this, those pregnancy hormones. Other headache triggers include fatigue, got plenty of that when you're expecting, tension, and that, blood sugar drops, ditto, physical or emotional stress, double ditto, nasal congestion, expectant moms or stuffy moms, overheating, enough said, or a combination of any or all of these. While they're a pain, the vast majority of pregnancy headaches aren't anything to worry about. There are plenty of ways around a headache, and some surprisingly effective ones don't come in capsule form. In many cases, you'll be able to fit the probable cause with a possible cure. For tension headaches and migraines, try lying in a dark, quiet room with your eyes closed. If you're at work, even a few minutes with your feet up and your eyes closed might help. Or put an ice pack or cold compress on the back of your neck for 20 minutes while you relax. Some CAM approaches, including acupuncture, acupressure, biofeedback, massage, and even possibly a magnesium supplement, check with your practitioner, can also bring headache relief. For sinus headaches, to unclog the congestion that's triggering the pain, try steam inhalation, running a cool mist humidifier, drinking plenty of fluids, and irrigating your nasal passages regularly with saline spray or rinses. To ease the pain, apply hot and cold compresses to the achy spots, often right above or around the eyes, cheeks, and forehead, alternating 30 seconds of each for a total of 10 minutes, four times a day. If you run a fever and/or the pain continues, check with your doctor to see if a sinus infection, common during pregnancy, may be causing your headaches. For all headaches. First, the bad news. Ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin, is pretty much off limits when you're expecting. Now the good news. You can find relief in acetaminophen, Tylenol, which is considered safe for occasional use during pregnancy. Check with your practitioner for recommendations on dosing. Never take any pain medication over the counter, prescription, or herbal without getting the all clear from your practitioner first. Often the best way to treat a headache is by trying to prevent it from happening in the first place. If an unexplained headache persists for more than a few hours, returns very often, is a result of fever, or is accompanied by visual disturbances or severe puffiness of the hands and face, notify your practitioner right away. Ditto if you get for the first time what you suspect might be a migraine.
I get migraines, and I heard they're more common in pregnancy. Is this true?
Call it a matter of pregnant providence. Some mamas-to-be find their migraines strike more frequently during their 9 months of pregnancy. Others, the lucky ones, find that these mother-of-all headaches come less often. It isn't known why this is true, or even why some people have recurrent migraines and others never have a single one. Since you've had migraines in the past, discuss with your physician which migraine medications are pregnancy-approved, so you'll be prepared for dealing with these monster headaches should they strike when you're expecting. Think prevention, too. If you know what brings on an attack, you can try to avoid the culprit. Stress is a common one, as are chocolate, cheese, and coffee. Try to determine what, if anything, can stave off a full-blown attack once the warning signs appear. You may be helped by splashing your face with cold water or applying a cold cloth or ice pack, lying down in a dark, quiet room for 2 or 3 hours, eyes covered, napping, meditating, or listening to music, or trying CAM techniques such as biofeedback, acupuncture, or magnesium supplements, if recommended by your practitioner.
Heading off headaches. Finding that pregnancy headaches are a pain? How about stopping them before they start? Check out these headache-checking tips. Relax. Pregnancy can be a time of high anxiety and lots of tension headaches. Reduce your stress level, and you may reduce your headaches. Try meditation or prenatal yoga to find your inner calm, Mom. Get enough rest. Pregnancy can also be a time of extreme fatigue, particularly in the first and last trimesters. Making a conscious effort to get more rest can help keep headaches at a minimum. But be careful not to overdo this ease. Too much sleep can also give you a headache. Seek some peace and quiet. Noise can give you a headache, especially if you're extra sound sensitive, which many pregnant women are. Make it a point to avoid noisy locales. The mall, loud parties, restaurants with bad acoustics. If your job is extra noisy, talk to your boss about taking steps to reduce the excess noise, or even ask for a transfer to a quieter area if possible. At home, keep TV and music volumes low. Keep it down in your car, too. Eat regularly. To avoid hunger headaches triggered by low blood sugar, be sure not to run on empty. Carry high-energy snacks, such as lentil chips, granola bars, nuts, freeze-dried fruit, with you in your bag. Stash them in the glove compartment of your car and in your office desk drawer, and always keep a supply on hand at home. Don't get stuffy. An overheated room or unventilated space can give anyone a headache, but especially an expectant mom who's overheated to start with. So try not to get stuffy, but when you can't avoid it, it's 2 days before Christmas and you have to brave that jam-packed mall, or you work there, step out for a stroll and a breath of fresh air when you can. Dress in layers when you know you're going somewhere stuffy, and keep comfortable and hopefully headache-free by removing layers as needed. Stuck inside? Try to crack a window at least. Make a light switch. Take the time to examine your surroundings, particularly the lighting around you, in a whole new, well, light. Some women find that a windowless workspace lit by fluorescent bulbs can trigger headaches. Switching to CFL or LED lighting and/or a room with windows may help. Though, unless you're the boss or in charge of office decor, it's probably not going to happen. If you're stuck under that fluorescent glow, take outdoor breaks when you can. Take breaks from your laptop, desktop, or tablet, too, since too much screen time can be a portal to headaches. Straighten up. Slouching while at the computer or looking down to swipe on your tablet, scour baby gear sites, or do other close work for long stretches of time can also trigger an aching head, so watch your posture.
Stretch marks.
I'm afraid I'm going to get stretch marks. Can they be prevented?
Nobody likes stretch marks, especially come skin-bearing season. Still, they're not easy to escape when you're expecting. The majority of pregnant women develop these pink or reddish, sometimes purplish, slightly indented, sometimes itchy streaks on their breasts, hips, and/or abdomen sometime during pregnancy. Stretch marks are caused by tiny tears in the supporting layers of tissue under your skin as it becomes stretched to its limit. Expectant moms who have good, elastic skin tone because they inherited it and or earned it by eating well, exercising regularly, and avoiding yo-yo dieting may slip through several pregnancies without a single telltale mark. And actually, your mother may be your best crystal ball when it comes to predicting whether you'll end up with stretch marks. If she sailed through her pregnancies with smooth skin intact, odds are you will too. If stretch marks struck her, they'll likely strike you too. You might be able to minimize, if not prevent, stretch marks by keeping weight gain steady, gradual, and moderate. The faster skin stretches, the more likely the stretching is to leave its mark. Promoting elasticity in your skin by nourishing it with a good diet, especially those vitamin C foods, may also help. And though no topical preparation has been proven to prevent stretch marks from zigzagging their way across your skin, there's no harm in applying pregnancy-safe moisturizers, such as cocoa or shea butter. Even without the scientific proof to back them up, many mamas swear they work. And if nothing else, they'll prevent the dryness and itching associated with pregnancy-stretched skin. An added plus, it may be fun for your partner to rub them gently on your tummy, and baby will enjoy the massage too. If you develop stretch marks, frequently referred to as the red badge of motherhood, albeit a badge most mothers would prefer not to wear, you can console yourself with the knowledge that they will gradually fade to a silvery sheen some months after delivery. You can also discuss with a dermatologist the possibility of reducing their visibility postpartum with laser therapy or Retin-A. In the meantime, try to wear them with pride, or at least as a reminder of the reward within.
Body art for two? Heading off to the House of Ink for a hot mama tattoo? Think before you ink. While the ink itself won't enter your bloodstream, there is a risk of infection anytime you get stuck with a needle, and why take that risk when you've got a baby on board? Something else to ponder before getting a tattoo for two. What looks symmetrical on your pregnant skin might become lopsided or distorted after you regain your pre-pregnancy shape. So keep your skin free of any new marks for now, and wait until after you've weaned your baby to express yourself through ink. If you already have a tattoo, no problem. Just sit back and watch it stretch. And don't worry about that lower back tattoo and how it might affect the epidural you were hoping for come Labor Day. As long as the tattoo ink is fully dried and the wound is healed, sticking that epidural needle through it won't be risky. Something else not to worry about. A healed tattoo on your breast, even near your areola, won't affect your breast milk or your nursing baby. What about using henna as body art during pregnancy? Since henna is plant-based and temporary, it's probably safe to use. Still, it's wise to follow certain caveats. Make sure the henna artist uses natural henna. It stains the skin reddish-brown, not the kind that contains the potentially irritating chemical paraphenylendiamine, which stains black. And check the artist's references. Read, "No fair doing it at a street fair." To be extra cautious, always the best way to be, ask your practitioner before using henna. Keep in mind, too, that pregnant skin is often extra sensitive skin, so there's a chance you'll have an allergic reaction to the henna, even if you've had it applied before without incident. To test your reaction to it, place a small amount of henna on a patch of skin and wait 24 hours to make sure no irritation appears.
First trimester weight gain.
I'm nearing the end of the first trimester, and I'm surprised that I haven't gained any weight yet.
Many moms-to-be have trouble putting on an ounce in the early weeks, and some even lose a few pounds, courtesy of morning sickness and food aversions. Fortunately, nature has your baby's back, offering protection even if you're too queasy or food averse to eat much or keep much down. Tiny fetuses have tiny nutritional needs, which means that your lack of weight gain now won't have any effect on your baby's growth or development. Not so, however, once you enter the second trimester. As your baby gets bigger and your baby-making factory picks up steam, calories and nutrients will be more and more in demand, and you'll need to begin playing weight gain catch-up, piling on the pounds at a steady pace. That is, unless your practitioner has prescribed otherwise. Happily, appetite usually picks up just as babies needs to, which will make gaining weight a piece of cake, even if you don't overdo the cake. So don't worry. Chances are the wait for weight gain will soon be over, and in the meantime, your lightweight baby doesn't mind a bit. From the fourth month forward, though, do start watching your weight to make sure it begins to move upward at the appropriate rate. If you continue to have trouble gaining weight, try packing in more calories, preferably nutrient-dense ones, through efficient eating. Try, too, to eat a little more food each day by adding more frequent snacks. If you can't eat a lot at one sitting, which isn't so good for your pregnancy digestion anyway, graze on 6 small meals daily instead of 3 big squares. Save fill-you-up beverages for after meals to avoid putting a damper on your appetite. Enjoy foods high in baby-friendly fats, nuts, seeds, avocados, olive oil, but don't try to add pounds by adding lots of junk food to your diet. Ultimately, weight gained on empty calories may add to your bottom line, but not necessarily to babies.
I'm 11 weeks pregnant, and I was shocked to find out that I'd already gained 12 pounds. What should I do now?
First of all, don't panic. Lots of women have that oops moment when they step on the scale at the end of their first trimester and discover they've gained 8, 10, a dozen pounds or more. Sometimes it's because they've taken eating for two just a tad too literally. You are eating for two, but one of you is really, really small. Relishing sweet release from a lifetime of dieting. Sometimes it's because they found that comfort from queasiness can come in high-calorie packages. Ice cream, pasta, or just bread by the loaf. Either way, all is not lost if you've gained a little too much in the first trimester. True, you can't turn back the scales or apply the first 3 months of gain neatly to the next 6. Your baby needs a steady supply of nutrients, especially in the second and third trimester when he or she will be growing over time. So cutting way back on calories now isn't a smart plan. But you can aim to keep your weight gain on target for the rest of your pregnancy, slowing it down without putting the brakes on it altogether by watching the scale and what you eat more carefully. Check with your practitioner and work out a safe and sensible weight gain goal for the next 2 trimesters. Even if you stay in the pound-a-week club through month 8, most women find their weight gain slows or stops in the 9th month, you won't end up more than a few pounds over the outside limit for recommended weight gain, 35 pounds. Check out the pregnancy diet to find out how to eat healthily for 2 without ending up looking like 2 of you. Gaining efficiently on the highest quality foods possible will not only accomplish that goal, but make the weight you do gain easier to shed postpartum.
Boys will be boys. Hungry mom? As you close in on your second trimester, you'll likely notice that your appetite, which you may have lost somewhere around week 6 or so, is starting to make a comeback. But if you're bellying up to the refrigerator with the regularity of a teenage boy, you may be expecting one, or at least a male fetus on his way to becoming a teenage boy. Research shows that moms-to-be carrying boys tend to eat more than moms expecting girls, which could explain why boys tend to be heavier at birth than girls. Food. And more food for thought.
Showing early.
Why am I already showing if I'm only in my first trimester?
Have lots more to show for your first trimester than you expected. Because every belly is different, some stay flat well into the second trimester, while others seem to pop by week 6. An early bump can be disconcerting. If I'm this big now, what will I look like in a few months? But it can also be welcome, tangible proof that there's actually a baby in there. Several possibilities might explain why you're showing so early. Bloating. Excess gas and bloating are often behind a prematurely protruding tummy. Bowel distension can contribute to if you've been very constipated. Extra pounds. Not surprisingly, if you've been packing away extra calories, you may be piling on extra pounds. And extra inches around your middle. Small build. If you begin thin, your growing uterus may have nowhere to hide, creating a little bulge even when it's still relatively little. Less muscle tone. An expectant mom with loose abdominal muscles may produce a pronounced pooch faster than a mom-to-be with a taut and toned torso. That's why second-timers tend to show earlier. Their abs have already been stretched. Could your early baby bump be caused by multiple babies? Twins usually show up on early ultrasound, not early bellies. Baby's heartbeat.
My friend heard her baby's heartbeat with a Doppler at 10 weeks. I'm a week ahead of her, and my doctor hasn't picked up my babies yet.
The lub-dub of a baby's heartbeat is definitely music to every parent-to-be's ears. That is, once they finally get to hear it. Even if you already had a listen to that beautiful sound on an early ultrasound, it may be audible as soon as 6 to 8 weeks that way, there's nothing like hearing it on a regular basis, as you likely will at your monthly checkups via Doppler, a handheld ultrasound device that amplifies the sound with the help of a special jelly on the belly. Some lucky expectant moms and dads get that monthly chance to feast their ears on that sweet beat starting as early as 10 to 12 weeks. Others have to wait a little longer. Your baby's position may be the cause of the inaudible heartbeat, or maybe the location of the placenta is muffling the sound. Sometimes extra fat padding can do the same. A slightly miscalculated due date may also explain why the Doppler isn't yet picking up your baby's heartbeat. By your 14th week, the miraculous sound of your baby's heartbeat is certain to be available for your listening pleasure via Doppler. If it isn't, or if you're really anxious, your practitioner will likely do an ultrasound or a repeat one to see and hear what the Doppler hasn't yet. When you do get to hear the heartbeat, listen carefully. Your normal heart rate is usually under 100 beats per minute, but your baby's will be around 110 to 160 beats per minute during early pregnancy and average between 120 and 160 beats per minute by mid-pregnancy. Don't compare fetal heartbeats with your pregnant pals, though. Every baby beats to his or her own drummer, and normal fetal heart rates vary a lot. Starting at about 18 to 20 weeks, the heartbeat can be heard without Doppler amplification, using a regular stethoscope.
I heart girls or boys. Is it a boy or a girl? And can your baby's heart rate give you a clue? While old wives and some practitioners have been telling tales for ages, a heart rate above 140 promises a girl. One under 140 delivers a boy. Studies show no correlation between fetal heart rate and the baby's gender. It may be fun to make predictions based on your baby's heart rate. You'll be right 50% of the time, after all. But you might not want to make nursery color choices based on it.
Sexual desire.
Ever since I became pregnant, I'm turned on all the time, and I can't get enough of sex. Is this normal?
Feeling a little hot under the collar and under those very snug jeans? Is your turn-on switch always on? Lucky you. While some women find their sex lives coming to a screeching halt in the first trimester, what with all those early pregnancy symptoms kicking their libidos out of bed, others, like you, find they just can't get enough of a good thing. You can thank those extra hormones surging through your body these days, as well as the increase in blood flow to your pelvic region, which can make your genitals feel fabulously engorged and ever tingly, for turning up the sexual thermostat. On top, so to speak, of that are the new curves you're sprouting and the larger-than-life breasts you're likely sporting, all of which can make you feel like one sexy mama. Plus, it might be the first time in your sexual life that you're able to make love when the mood moves you, without having to spoil the moment while you run to the bathroom for your diaphragm or calculate your fertility with an ovulation predictor. This happy state of sensual affairs may be most pronounced during the first trimester, when hormonal havoc is at its height, or it can continue right up until delivery day. Since your increased sexual appetite is perfectly normal, as is a lack of sexual desire, don't worry or feel guilty about it, and don't be surprised or concerned if your orgasms are more frequent or more intense than ever. And if you're having orgasms for the first time, that's even more reason to celebrate. As long as your practitioner has green-lighted sex in all its forms, and that's usually the case, seize the moment and your partner. Explore different positions before that belly of yours makes many of them a physical impossibility. And most of all, enjoy that cozy twosome while you can, and before your libido takes its very likely postpartum nosedive. In other words, get it while you can.
For fathers, libido now. Sexual desire, yours and your partner's, will be up and down during pregnancy. Here are some of the unexpected things you may expect when you're expecting sex. She's turned on all the time. The rumors are true. Some women really can't get enough sex when they're expecting. And for good reason. Her genitals are swollen with hormones and blood, leaving the nerves down below set on tingle mode. Other parts are swollen too, you might have noticed, including places like those breasts and hips that can make a woman feel more womanly than ever, and more sensually charged. So be there for the taking whenever she's in the mood to grab you. Feel lucky that you're getting lucky so often. But always take your cues from her, especially now. Proceed with seduction if she's up for it and into it, but don't go without the green light. Though some women are in the mood throughout their 9 months, others find that the party doesn't get started until the second trimester, or that desire dips in the third. Be ready to roll with her changing sexual agenda when she goes from turned on to turned off in 60 seconds. Keep in mind, too, that there will be some logistical challenges in mid to late pregnancy as her body goes from two-seater to semi. She's never in the mood. So many factors, both physical and emotional, can affect sexual desire. It could be that pregnancy symptoms have leveled her libido. It's not so easy to lose yourself in the moment when you're busy losing your lunch, or to get hot when you're bothered by backache and swollen ankles and super painful nipples, or to get it on when you barely have the energy to get up, particularly in this uncomfortable first trimester. Or that she's as turned off by her new roundness as you are turned on by it. What you see as a sexy round bottom, she may see as a big fat ass. Or that she's preoccupied with all things baby, and or having a hard time blending the roles of mom and lover. Or that, and this happens to many expectant moms, even the normally libidinous ones, she just doesn't want to be touched. At all. Period. When she's not in the mood, even if she's never in the mood, don't take it personally. Try again another time, but always be a good sport while you're waiting for her ship to come in. Accept those not nows and those don't touch theirs with an understanding smile and a hug, if she's open to touching, that lets her know you love her even when you can't show it the way you'd like to. Remember, she's got a lot going on in her mind and in her body right now. It's a safe bet that your sexual needs aren't front and center on her plate. So don't push the sexual agenda, but do step up the romance, communication, and cuddling. Not only will these bring you closer together, but because they're powerful aphrodisiacs for many women, they may just bring you what you're craving. And don't forget to tell your partner, often, how sexy and attractive you find the pregnant her. Women may be intuitive, but they're not mind readers. You're not interested in getting it on anymore. There are plenty of good reasons why your sex drive may be in a slump now. Perhaps you and your spouse work so conscientiously at conception that sex suddenly feels too much like hard work. Maybe you're so focused on the baby and on becoming a dad that your sexual side is taking a back seat. Or the changes in your spouse's body are taking some getting used to. Or fear that you'll hurt her or your baby during sex, you won't, has sent your mojo into hiding. Or it could be a hang-up thing, the hang-up being that you've never made love to a mother before. Even though that mother happens to be a woman you've always loved making love to. Or it could be the weirdness factor that's keeping you down. Getting close to your pregnant partner might mean getting too close for comfort to your baby during a decidedly adult activity, even though baby's completely oblivious. The normal hormonal changes that expectant fathers experience can also slow them sexually. Confusing these conflicted feelings even more could be miscommunication. You think she's not interested, so you subconsciously put your urges on ice. She thinks you're not interested, so she gives Desire a cold shower. Try to focus less on the quantity of sex in your relationship and more on the quality of the intimacy you're sharing. Less may not be more, but it still can be fulfilling. You might even find that stepping up the other kinds of intimacy, the hand-holding, the unexpected hugs, the confiding of your feelings, might put you both more in the mood for lovemaking. Don't be surprised, too, if your libido gets a boost once both of you have adjusted to the emotional and physical changes of pregnancy. It's also possible that your sexual slowdown will continue throughout the 9 months, and beyond, too. After all, even couples who can't get enough while they're expecting find that their sex lives can come to a screeching halt once there's a baby in the house, at least for the first couple of months. All of this is fine, and all of it is temporary. Meanwhile, make sure the nurturing of your baby doesn't interfere with the care and feeding of your relationship. Put romance on the table regularly, and while you're at it, put some candles there too, plus a dinner you cooked up while she was napping. Surprise her with flowers or a sexy negligee. They make them for expectant moms, too. Suggest a moonlit stroll or hot cocoa and cuddles on the couch. Share your feelings and encourage her to share hers. Keep the hugs and kisses coming, and coming, and coming. You'll both stay warm while you're waiting for things to heat up again. Most important, be sure that your partner knows that your lack of libido has nothing to do with her physically or emotionally. Expectant moms can suffer a crumbling of confidence when it comes to their pregnant body image, particularly as those pounds start piling on. Letting her know, often through words and touch, that she's more attractive to you than ever will help keep her from taking your drop in sexual interest personally.
At-home Dopplers. Tempted to buy one of those inexpensive prenatal heart listeners so you can stay tuned in to your baby's heartbeat between practitioner visits? Being able to monitor your baby's heart rate can be loads of fun and may even help you have a better night's sleep if you're a stressor by nature. But listen to this. Though these devices and apps are considered safe to use, they're not as sophisticated as the one your practitioner uses, and most aren't nearly sensitive enough to pick up fetal heart tones until after the 5th month of pregnancy. Use one before then, and you'll likely be met with silence or other clicks, swishes, and whooshes from air moving through your GI tract or blood flowing in your arteries instead of a steady beat, which can increase worry unnecessarily instead of putting it to rest. Even later on in pregnancy, at-home Dopplers can't always pick up what you're looking for. Baby's position or a bad angle on the device can easily throw off an at-home Doppler, or you may pick up the sound of blood flowing through the placenta and mistake it for a heartbeat. That's especially true about the standalone apps, where you use your phone's microphone to hear the in-utero sounds. They're notoriously unreliable, even during the 3rd trimester. And if you do manage to find your baby's heartbeat, the way you interpret the readings might not be accurate. You might not be able to recognize changes in the rate or rhythm that may indicate a problem, for instance. Or the readings might be different enough from the ones you're used to getting at your checkups to prompt undue concern. Still can't resist having a heart listener of your own? You should get your practitioner's okay before placing your order, especially because the FDA considers them prescription devices that should be used only under the supervision of a medical professional. And keep in mind that you get what you pay for, and you might get somewhat less than you bargained for.
All of my friends say that they had an increased sex drive early in pregnancy. How come I feel so unsexy?
Pregnancy is a time of change in many aspects of your life, not the least of them, sexual. Hormones, which, as you've undoubtedly noticed, play a role in every physical and emotional high and low, also play an important role in sexuality. But those hormones hit every woman differently, turning up the heat for some and spraying a cold shower on others. Some women who have never had either an orgasm or much of an appetite for sex suddenly experience both for the first time when they're expecting. Other women, accustomed to being sexually insatiable and easily orgasmic, suddenly find that they're completely lacking in libido and are difficult to arouse, or even don't want to be touched. And even if your hormones have pushed your passion turn-on button, pregnancy symptoms, that nausea, that fatigue, those painfully tender breasts, can stand between you and a good time when things get real. These changes in sexuality can be thrilling, disconcerting, guilt-provoking, or a confusing combination of all three, and they are all perfectly normal. Most important is recognizing that your sexual feelings during pregnancy, and your partner's as well, may be more erratic than erotic. You may feel sexy one day and not the next. Mutual understanding and open communication will see you through, as will a sense of humor. And remember, and remind your partner, that many women who've lost that loving feeling in the first trimester get it back in the second, in spades. So don't be surprised if a very warm front moves into your bedroom soon. Cramp after orgasm.
I get crampy after orgasm. Is that normal, or does it mean something's wrong?
Not to worry, and not to stop enjoying sex either. Cramping, sometimes accompanied by lower backache, both during and after orgasm, is common and harmless during a low-risk pregnancy. Its cause can be physical, a combination of the normal increased blood flow to the pelvic area during pregnancy, the equally normal congestion of the sexual organs during arousal and orgasm, and the normal contractions of the uterus after orgasm. Or it can be psychological, a result of the common but unfounded fear of hurting the baby during sex. Or it can be a combination of physical and psychological factors, since the mind-body connection is so strong when it comes to sex. In other words, that cramping isn't a sign that you're hurting your baby while you're enjoying yourself. In fact, unless your practitioner has advised you otherwise, it's perfectly safe to mix the pleasure of sex and the business of making a baby. If the cramps bother you, ask your partner for a gentle low back rub. It may relieve not only the cramps, but any tension that might be triggering them.
All about pregnant on the job.
If you're pregnant, you've already got your work cut out for you. Add a full-time job to the full-time job of baby making, and your workload doubles. Juggling it all, practitioner visits with client meetings, trips to the bathroom with trips to the conference room, morning sickness with business lunches, telling your best friend in accounting, who will be excited for you, with telling your boss, who might not be, staying healthy and comfortable with staying motivated and successful, preparing for baby's arrival with preparing for maternity leave, can be a 9-to-5 challenge that keeps you working overtime. This section can help the employed mama-to-be navigate what's to come. When to tell the boss. Wondering when to belly up to your boss's desk to spill the pregnancy beans? There's no universally perfect time, though it's a sure bet you should do it before that bump gets too big to miss. A lot will depend on how family-friendly or unfriendly your workplace is. So more will depend on your feelings, the physical and emotional. Here are some factors to consider. How you're feeling and whether you're showing. If morning sickness has you spending more time hovering over the toilet than sitting at your desk, if first trimester fatigue has you barely able to lift your head off the pillow in the morning, or if you're already packing a pooch that's too big to blame on your breakfast, you probably won't be able to keep your secret long. In that case, telling sooner makes more sense than waiting until your boss and everyone else in the office has come to his or her own conclusions. If, on the other hand, you're feeling fine and still zipping your pants up with ease, you may be able to hold off on the announcement until later. What kind of work you do? If you work under conditions or with substances that could be harmful to your pregnancy or your baby, you'll need to make your announcement and ask for a transfer or change of duties, if at all feasible, as soon as possible. How work is going? A woman announcing her pregnancy at work may, unfortunately and unfairly, raise many red flags, including, will she still have the energy to produce while pregnant? And will her mind be on her work or on her baby? And will she leave us in the lurch? You may head off some of these concerns by making your announcement just after finishing a report, scoring a deal, ringing up record sales, coming up with a great idea, or otherwise proving that you can be both pregnant and productive. Whether reviews are coming up, if you're afraid your announcement might influence the results of an upcoming performance or salary review, try to wait until the results are in before sharing your news. Keep in mind that proving you've been passed up for a promotion or raise based solely on the fact that you're expecting and that you'll soon be a worker and a mother, not necessarily in that order, may be difficult. Whether you work in a gossip mill. If gossip is one of your company's chief products, be especially wary. Should word of mouth of your pregnancy reach your boss's ear before your announcement does, you'll have trust issues to deal with, in addition to the pregnancy-related ones. Make sure that your boss is the first to know, or at least that those you tell first can be trusted not to squeal. What the family friendliness quotient is. Try to gauge your employer's attitude toward pregnancy and family if you're not sure what it is. Ask coworkers who've walked in your soon-to-be-swollen footsteps before, if there are any, but keep inquiries discreet. Check the policies on maternity leave in the employee handbook, or set up a confidential meeting with someone in human resources or the person in charge of benefits. If the company has had a history of being supportive of moms and moms-to-be, you may be inclined to make the announcement sooner. Either way, you'll have a better sense of what you'll be facing.
The pregnant worker's rights. There is much room for improvement in the U.S. workplace when it comes to families and their needs. In fact, the U.S. is one of only a tiny handful of countries in the world that don't mandate paid leave for moms, though individual policies on what's due a pregnant or new mom worker vary from company to company. Here's what federal law recognizes. The Pregnancy Discrimination Act of 1978. This act prohibits discrimination based on pregnancy, childbirth, or related medical conditions. Under this law, employers must treat you as they would treat any employee with a medical disability. However, it does not protect you if you end up not being able to do the job you were hired to do, or require that you be offered a transfer to a position with less physical stress while you're expecting. It is considered discriminatory and illegal to pass up a woman for a promotion or a job or fire her solely on the basis of her pregnancy. But this kind of discrimination, like all kinds of discrimination, can be difficult to prove. Complaints of pregnancy discrimination can be reported to the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC, at eeoc.gov. The Family and Medical Leave Act, FMLA, of 1993. All public agencies and private sector companies that employ at least 50 workers within a 75-mile radius of each other are subject to regulation under this act. If you have been employed by such a company for at least a year, working at least 1,250 hours during the year, you are entitled to take a total of up to 12 weeks of unpaid maternity leave. The leave can also be used to care for a sick child or another family member each year that you are employed. Barring unforeseen complications or early delivery, you must notify your employer of your leave 30 days in advance. During your leave, you must continue to collect all benefits, including health insurance, and when you return, you must be restored to an equivalent position with equal pay and benefits. Keep in mind, too, that you're entitled to use some of your leave during your pregnancy if you're not feeling well. In some cases, companies may be able to exclude from FMLA women who are considered key employees, those the company can't do without for 12 weeks, and who are in the top 10% compensation bracket. The Wage and Hour Division of the U.S. Department of Labor can offer information on FMLA. For more help, contact them at dol.gov. State and local laws. Some state and local laws offer additional protection against pregnancy discrimination. A few states and some larger companies also offer temporary disability insurance, which allows for partial wages during time off for medical disabilities, including pregnancy. Three states, California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island, offer 4 to 6 weeks of paid leave, though not at full salary, to bond with a new baby or care for a seriously ill family member. Don't like what you're reading about your rights as a pregnant worker who's about to become a new mom worker? Use social media and your vote to mom mobilize around the issue. And consider supporting companies that voluntarily offer a substantial amount of paid leave to their employees, sometimes for both moms and dads.
Making the announcement. Once you've decided when to make your announcement, you can take some steps to ensure that it's well received. Prepare yourself. Before you break the news, do your research. Learn everything you need to know about your employer's maternity leave policy, or lack of. Some companies offer paid leave, others unpaid. Still others allow you to use sick days or vacation days as part of your leave. Know your rights. Pregnant women and parents in general have fewer rights in the U.S. than almost anywhere in the world. Still, some baby steps have been made on behalf of expectant workers. Many other big steps, including paid leave for new moms and dads, have been taken voluntarily by some forward-thinking, family-friendly companies. Put together a plan. Efficiency is always appreciated on the job, and being prepared invariably impresses. So before you go in to make your announcement, prepare a detailed plan that includes how long you plan to stay on the job, barring any unforeseen complications, how long your maternity leave will be, how you plan to finish up business before you leave, and how you propose that any unfinished business be handled by others. If you would like to return part-time at first, propose that now. Writing up your plan will ensure you won't forget the details, plus it may score you extra efficiency points. Set aside the time. Don't try to tell the boss the news when you're on the way to a meeting or when he or she's got one foot out the door Friday night. Make an appointment to meet so no one will be rushed or distracted. Try to make it on a day and at a time that is usually less stressful at your workplace. Postpone the meeting if things suddenly take a turn for the tense. Accentuate the positive. Don't start your announcement with apologies or misgivings. Instead, let your boss know that you are not only happy about your pregnancy, but confident in your ability and committed in your plan to mix work and family. Be flexible, but not spineless. Have your plan in place and open it up to discussion. Then be ready to compromise. Make sure there is room for negotiation built into your plan, but not to back down completely. Come up with a realistic bottom line and stick with it. Set it in writing. Once you've worked out the details of your pregnancy protocol and your maternity leave, confirm it in writing so there won't be any confusion or misunderstanding later. As in, I never said that. Never underestimate the power of parents. If your company is not as family-friendly as you'd like, consider joining forces to petition for better parental perks. Making sure that similar allowances are made for employees who must take time off to care for sick spouses or parents may help unite, rather than divide the company around the cause.
The juggling act. Even if you don't have any kids at home yet, staying on the job while you're expecting will require that you practice the fine art of juggling work and family, or at least family-to-be, especially during the first trimester and the last, when the symptoms of pregnancy may be dragging you down and the distractions of pregnancy may be competing for your attention. This juggling act may be exhausting and sometimes overwhelming. In other words, good preparation for the years of working and parenting you may have ahead of you. These tips won't make working simultaneously at those dual jobs easier, but they may help make your working life work more smoothly with your making a baby life. Schedule smart. Make appointments for checkups, ultrasounds, blood tests, that glucose tolerance test, and other procedures before your workday begins. You may be too tired afterward or during your lunch break. If you need to leave work in the middle of the day, explain to your boss that you have a doctor's appointment and keep a log of the visits, just in case anyone accuses you of slacking off. If necessary, request a note from your practitioner verifying your appointment and give it to your employer or someone in your human resources department. Remember not to forget. If your brain cells seem to be dropping like flies, you can blame your hormones and start taking precautions so your pregnancy-impaired memory doesn't get you into workplace hot water. To ensure that you don't forget that meeting, that lunch date, those calls that had to be made by noon, make lists, set reminders, load up on post-its, and keep your smartphone or tablet handy, if you can remember where you put it. Know your limits and stop before you reach them. This isn't the time to volunteer to take on extra projects or extra hours unless it's absolutely necessary. Focus on what needs to be done and realistically can be done without wearing yourself out. To avoid feeling overwhelmed, complete one task at a time. Just say yes. If coworkers offer to help out when you're not feeling well, don't hesitate to take them up on their kindness. Maybe you can return the favor someday. And for all of you expectant micromanagers, if there were ever a time to learn how to delegate, this would be it. Recharge as needed. When you find yourself emotionally overwhelmed, and you will, a stuck stapler can start the tears flowing when you're pregnant, take a brief walk, a bathroom break, or some relaxation breaths to clear your head. Keep a stress ball handy to knead as needed, too. Speak up. Not only are you only human, but you're human and pregnant, which means you can't do it all and do it all well, especially if you feel crappy, as you will sometimes feel. If you can barely lift your head off your pillow or leave the bathroom for more than 5 minutes, and you've got a pile of stuff on your desk or a major deadline looming, don't panic. Tell your boss you need extra time or extra help. And don't beat yourself up or let anyone else beat you up. You're not lazy or incompetent. You're making a baby, and that's the hardest job of all.
Staying comfortable on the job. Between nausea and fatigue, backaches and headaches, puffy ankles and a leaky bladder, it's hard for any expectant mom to have a completely comfortable day. Put her at a desk or on her swollen feet or at a job that requires standing, and you've got a recipe for even more pregnancy discomfort. To stay as comfortable as possible on the job when you're expecting, try these tips. Dress for success and comfort. Avoid tight, restrictive clothing, socks or knee highs that cut off circulation, and heels that are too high or too spiky. 2-inch chunky heels, low wedges, or flats with arch support work best. Wearing support hose designed for pregnancy will help ward off or minimize a variety of symptoms, from swelling to varicose veins, and may be especially important if you're spending a lot of the day on your feet. As you get bigger and achier, you may find a belly sling or band is your favorite workday accessory. Watch the weather inside you. No matter the climate in your city or your office, when you're pregnant, the forecast is for wildly swinging body temperatures. Sweating one minute and chilly the next, you'll want to favor the layered look and have a layer ready for every possible condition. Thinking of bundling up in a wool turtleneck to brave a sub-freezing day? Don't do it unless you've got a lightweight layer underneath that you can strip down to when a hormone-driven heat wave starts burning inside. And even if you're usually toasty in just a tee, stash a sweater in your drawer or locker. Your body temp goes both ways fast these days. Stay off your feet, at least as much as possible. If your job demands that you stand for long stretches, take sitting or walking breaks. If possible, keep one foot on a low stool, knee bent, while you stand to take some of the pressure off your back. Switch feet regularly. Flex them periodically, too. Put your feet up. Find a box, low stool, or other tip-proof object on which to discreetly rest your weary feet under your desk. Take a break, often. Stand up and walk around if you've been sitting. Sit down with your feet up if you've been standing. If there's a spare sofa and a slot in your schedule, lie down for a few minutes. Do some stretching exercise, especially for your back, legs, and neck. And at least once or even twice every hour, do this 30-second stretch. Stand up, raise your arms above your head, clasp your fingers, palms up, and reach up. Next, place your hands on a desk or table, step back a bit, and stretch out your back. Sit down and rotate your feet in both directions. If you can bend over and touch your toes, even from a seated position, go for it to release the tension in your neck and shoulders. Looking for more desk side exercises? The What to Expect When You're Expecting, the workout DVD, has plenty. Adjust your chair. Back hurt? Add a lumbar cushion for extra support. Bottom sore? Slide a soft pillow onto your seat. Hips bothering you? Be sure to get up and walk around at least once an hour, if not more. If your chair reclines, consider setting it back a few notches to create more and more space between your belly and your desk. And if you need more belly support, try a belly band. Hang out by the water cooler, not just for the latest office dish, but for frequent refills of your cup. Or keep a refillable water bottle at your desk. Drinking plenty of water can keep many troublesome pregnancy symptoms at bay, including excessive swelling, and may help prevent a UTI. Don't hold it in. Emptying your bladder as needed, but at least every 2 hours, also helps prevent UTIs. A good strategy? Plan to pee every hour or so, whether you need to or not. You'll feel better overall if you avoid getting to the bursting point. Take time for your tummy. Every expectant mom's job description includes feeding her baby regularly, no matter what else is on her workday agenda. So plan accordingly, making room in even your busiest days for 3 meals plus at least 2 snacks or 6 mini meals. Scheduling meetings as working meals may help. So will keeping a supply of nutritious snacks in your desk, as well as in the office fridge, if there is one. Rediscover brown bags or pack your lunch or mini meals in some easy-to-tote food storage containers. That way you'll be able to keep baby fed even when time's not on your side. Keep an eye on the scale. Make sure job stress or erratic eating isn't keeping you from gaining enough weight or is contributing to too many pounds, as it can for stress eaters, especially if they work near a vending machine. Pack a toothbrush. If you're suffering from morning sickness, brushing your teeth can protect them between bouts of vomiting. Plus, it helps freshen up your breath when it most needs freshening. Mouthwash will also be a welcome addition to the breath freshening team, and it can help dry out a mouth that's full of excess saliva. Drooling and gagging are common in the first trimester and can be extra embarrassing at work. Lift with care. Do any necessary lifting properly to avoid strain on the back. Watch what you breathe. Stay out of smoke-filled areas, even outdoor areas where smokers take their breaks. Not only is secondhand smoke bad for you and your baby, but it can also increase fatigue. Chill, mama, chill. Too much stress isn't good for you or your baby, so try to use breaks to relax as fully as you can. Listen to music or a nature sounds app, close your eyes and meditate, do some soothing stretches, or take a 5-minute stroll around the building. Listen to your body. Try to slow down your pace if you're feeling tired.
Working with carpal tunnel. If you spend your day, and maybe your nights too, tap, tap, tapping on a keyboard, you may already be familiar with the symptoms of carpal tunnel syndrome, CTS. A well-known worker's malady, CTS causes pain, tingling, and numbness in the hands, and most often strikes those who spend a lot of time doing repetitive tasks, typing, punching numbers, working a smartphone. What you might not know, however, is that CTS affects the majority of pregnant women. Even moms-to-be who rarely touch a keyboard are prone to it, thanks to swollen tissue in the body that presses on nerves. The good news is that carpal tunnel syndrome is not dangerous, just uncomfortable, especially on the job. Even better, you can try a number of remedies until you see the light at the end of the carpal tunnel. Raise your office chair so your wrists are straight and your hands are lower than your elbows as you type. Switch to a wrist-friendly ergonomic keyboard, one that has a wrist rest, as well as a mouse that offers wrist support. Wear a wrist brace while typing. Take frequent breaks from the computer. Go hands-free if you're on the phone a lot. In the evenings, soak your hands in cool water to reduce any swelling. Ask your practitioner about other possible remedies, including vitamin B6 supplements, acupuncture, or pain relievers.
Staying safe on the job. Most jobs are completely compatible with the job of making a baby, which is very good news to the millions of expectant moms who must manage to work full-time at both occupations. Still, some jobs are obviously safer and better suited to pregnant women than others. Most on-the-job problems can be avoided with the right precautions or a modification of duties. Check with your practitioner for other workplace recommendations in your case. Office work. Anyone with a desk job knows the pain of stiff necks, aching backs, and headaches, all of which can make a pregnant woman feel more uncomfortable than she already is. No harm done to baby, but a lot of wear and tear on your achy, expectant body. If you spend a lot of time sitting, be sure to stand up, stretch, and walk away from your desk frequently. Stretch your arms, neck, and shoulders while sitting in your chair. Discreetly put your feet up on a low box or stool to reduce swelling, and support your back with a cushion. What about computer safety? Luckily, computer monitors are not a hazard to pregnant women, and neither are laptops. More worrisome is the multitude of physical discomforts, including wrists and arm strain, dizziness, and headaches that can result from too much time spent in front of the computer. For fewer aches and pains, use a height-adjustable chair with a backrest that supports your lower back. Adjust the monitor to a comfortable height. The top should be level with your eyes and about an arm's length away from you. Use an ergonomic keyboard designed to reduce the risk of carpal tunnel syndrome, if possible, and/or a wrist rest. When you put your hands on the keyboard, they should be lower than your elbows, and your forearms should be parallel to the floor. Healthcare work. Staying healthy is every healthcare professional's top on-the-job priority. But it ranks even higher when you're staying healthy for two. Among the potential risks you'll need to protect yourself and your baby from are exposure to chemicals, such as ethylene oxide and formaldehyde, used for sterilization of equipment, to some anti-cancer drugs, infections such as hepatitis B and HIV, and ionizing radiation. Most technicians working with low-dose diagnostic x-rays are not exposed to dangerous levels of radiation. It is recommended, however, that women of childbearing age working with higher-dose radiation wear a special device that keeps track of daily exposure to ensure the cumulative annual exposure does not exceed safe levels. Most healthcare professionals wear these exposure trackers anyway. Depending on the particular risk you're exposed to, you might want to either take safety precautions as recommended by NIOSH or switch to safer work for now, if possible. Manufacturing work. If you have a factory or manufacturing job that has you operating heavy or dangerous machinery, talk to your boss about a change of duties while you're pregnant, if possible. You can also contact the machinery's manufacturer, ask for the corporate medical director, for more information about the product's safety. How safe conditions are in a factory depends on what's being made in it, and to a certain extent, on how responsible and responsive the people who run it are. OSHA lists a number of substances that a pregnant woman should avoid on the job. Where proper safety protocols are implemented, exposure to such toxins can be avoided. Your union or other labor organization may be able to help you determine if you are properly protected. You can also get useful information from NIOSH or OSHA. Physically strenuous work. Work that involves heavy lifting, physical exertion, long hours, rotating shifts, or continuous standing may somewhat raise an expectant mom's risk for preterm delivery. If you have such a job, you should request a transfer to a less strenuous position by 20 to 28 weeks until after delivery and postpartum recovery. Emotionally stressful work. The extreme stress in some workplaces seems to take its toll on workers in general and on pregnant women in particular. So it makes sense to cut down on the stress as much as possible, especially now. An obvious but not often feasible way to do that is switch to a job that is less stressful or take early maternity leave. Understandably, if the job is critical financially or professionally, you may find yourself even more stressed if you leave it. You might instead consider ways of reducing stress, including meditation and deep breathing, regular exercise to release those feel-good endorphins, and taking breaks when you can. If you're self-employed, cutting back may be even tougher. You're probably your own most demanding boss, but wise to consider. Other work. Teachers and social workers who deal with young children may come into contact with infections that can potentially affect pregnancy, such as chickenpox, Fifth disease, and CMV. Animal handlers, meat cutters, and meat inspectors may be exposed to toxoplasmosis, though if they've developed immunity already, their babies would not be at risk. If you work where infection is a risk, be sure you're immunized as needed and take appropriate precautions, such as washing hands frequently and thoroughly, wearing protective gloves and a mask, and so on. Flight attendants or pilots may be at a slightly higher risk for miscarriage or preterm labor. Those studies are inconclusive because of exposure to radiation from the sun during high-altitude flights, and they might want to consider switching to shorter routes. They're usually flown at lower altitudes or to groundwork during pregnancy. Artists, photographers, hairstylists, cosmeticians, dry cleaners, those in the leather industry, agricultural and horticultural workers, and others may be exposed to a variety of possibly hazardous chemicals in the course of work, so be sure to wear gloves and other protective gear. If you work with any suspect substances, take appropriate precautions, which in some cases may mean avoiding the part of the job that involves the use of chemicals.
Quiet, please. By about 24 weeks, your baby's outer, middle, and inner ear are well developed. By 27 to 30 weeks, your baby's ears are mature enough to start responding to the sounds that filter into the womb. The sounds, of course, are muffled, and not just by the physical barrier of amniotic fluid and your own body. In his or her own fluid-filled home, a baby's eardrum and middle ear can't do their normal job of amplifying sounds. So even sounds that are quite loud to you won't be for your baby. Still, since noise is one of the most prevalent of all occupational hazards and has long been known to cause hearing loss in those exposed to it regularly, you might want to play it safe when it comes to excessive noise during pregnancy. That's because studies suggest that prolonged and repeated exposure to very loud noise raises the odds of a baby suffering some hearing loss, especially at lower frequencies. Such prolonged noise exposure, say daily 8-hour shifts in an industrial workplace, where the sound level is more than 90 or 100 decibels, about the same as standing next to a loud lawnmower or a chainsaw, can also increase the risk of premature delivery and low birth weight babies. Repeated brief exposure to extremely intense sound of 150 or 155 decibels, like standing next to a screaming jet engine, can cause similar problems. Generally, it's safest to avoid more than 8 hours of continuous exposure to noises louder than 85 or 90 decibels, such as a lawnmower or truck traffic, or more than 2 hours a day of exposure to noise louder than 100 decibels, such as that from a chainsaw, pneumatic drill, or snowmobile. More research needs to be done, but in the meantime, expectant mothers who work in an extremely noisy environment, such as a club where loud music is played, in a subway, or in a factory where protective hearing devices are required, you can't put these devices on your fetus, or who are exposed to heavy vibrations on the job, should play it safe and seek a temporary transfer or a new job. And try to avoid prolonged exposure to very loud noises in your everyday life. Don't take front seats at a concert. Turn down the volume in your car and wear headphones instead of blasting the music while you're vacuuming. Getting all the facts. By law, you have the right to know what chemicals you are exposed to on the job, and your employer is obliged to tell you. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, is the regulatory body that monitors those laws. Contact them for more information on your rights regarding workplace safety at OSHA.gov. Further information on workplace hazards can also be obtained by contacting the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH, Clearinghouse for Occupational Safety and Health Information, cdc.gov/NIOSH/topics/repro. If your job does expose you to hazards, either ask to be transferred temporarily to a safer post or, finances and company policy permitting, begin your maternity leave early.
Staying on the job. Planning to work until that first contraction hits, many women successfully mix business with baby-making right through the 9th month without compromising the well-being of either occupation. Still, some jobs are better suited to pregnant women during the long haul, so to speak, than other jobs. And chances are the decision of whether you'll continue to work until delivery will be impacted by the kind of work you do. If you have a desk job, you can probably plan on going straight from the office to the birthing room. A sedentary job that isn't particularly stressful may actually be less of a strain on both you and baby than staying home nesting. And some walking an hour or two daily on the job or off is not only harmless, but beneficial, assuming you aren't carrying heavy loads as you go. Jobs that are strenuous, very stressful, and/or involve a great deal of standing, however, may be another somewhat controversial matter. Some research has found that women who were on their feet 65 hours a week didn't seem to have any more pregnancy complications than women who worked many fewer and usually less stressful hours. Other research, however, suggests that steady, strenuous, or stressful activity or long hours of standing after the 28th week, particularly if an expectant mother also has other children to care for at home, may increase the risk of certain complications, including premature labor, high blood pressure, and a low birth weight baby. Should women who stand on the job work past the 28th week? Most practitioners give the green light to work longer if a mom-to-be feels fine and her pregnancy is progressing normally. Standing on the job all the way to term, however, may not be a good idea, less because of the theoretical risks to the pregnancy than the real risks that such pregnancy discomforts as backache, varicose veins, and hemorrhoids will be aggravated. It's probably a good idea to take early leave, if possible, from a job that requires frequent shift changes, which can upset appetite and sleep routines and worsen fatigue. One that seems to exacerbate any pregnancy problems, such as headache, backache, or fatigue, or one that increases the risk of falls or other accidental injuries. But the bottom line, every pregnancy, every woman, and every job is different. Together with your practitioner, you can make the decision that's right for your workplace situation. Changing jobs. With all the changes going on in your life, like your growing belly and the ever-expanding responsibilities that come with it, it may seem counterintuitive to want to add another to your list. But there are dozens of valid reasons why an expectant mom might consider a job change. Maybe your employer isn't family-friendly, and you're concerned about balancing career and motherhood when you return from maternity leave. Maybe the commute is too long, the hours are inflexible, or the grind is all-consuming. It could be that you're bored or not fulfilled, and hey, change is in the air anyway, so why not make the most of it? Or perhaps you're worried that your current workplace might be hazardous to you or your developing baby. Whatever your reason, here are some things to consider before you make a job move. Looking for work takes time, energy, and focus. three things you may be lacking these days as you concentrate on having a healthy pregnancy. Will you be up for all those interviews, especially if morning sickness has you frequently running for the nearest toilet, or if pregnancy forgetfulness has you fumbling for your thoughts? Even if you're confident you can ace the interview process, consider that starting a new job also demands a great deal of concentration. All eyes are on you, so you have to be extra careful not to make mistakes. Before you jump ship, you'll need to be sure the new job you're seeking out is really all it's cracked up to be. In your mind, at least. Does the company you're smitten with offer twice as much vacation time, but charge double for health insurance? Do they allow employees to work from home, yet expect them to be on call morning, noon, and night? Are the salaries higher and likewise the travel demands? Keep in mind that what looks like a great job now may not be so great when you're juggling it with new baby care. Your home life will be a lot more complicated, so you might not want your workplace life to be. Also consider that companies often offer fewer paid short-term disability days or pay a lower percentage of your salary during leave if you have been employed for less than 1 year. By law, your potential employer has no right to ask whether you're pregnant, if it isn't already obvious, and can't deny you an offer because you're pregnant, though that kind of discrimination is often hard to prove. Consider that some companies will have a hard time justifying, as justified as it may be by law, bringing you on, training you, and then letting you take maternity leave so quickly. And not all employers appreciate what they consider to be a bait-and-switch strategy. You accept a job, then you tell them you'll be out on maternity leave. So though it may be smart in the short run to keep your pregnancy a secret as you interview, it may damage your relationship with the company in the end. On the other hand, sometimes it's better to secure the offer first and then discuss the future once you know the company wants to hire you, but before you accept the position. What if you started a new job before you found out you were pregnant? Be upfront about the situation, and then get down to the business of doing your job to the best of your expectant ability. Just make sure you know your rights about job security, should the situation take a negative turn.
Unfair treatment at work. Think you're being treated unfairly on the job because of your pregnancy? Don't just sit there. Do something. Let someone you trust, your supervisor, someone in human resources, know how you feel. If that doesn't fix the problem, see if there is a procedure for employees to follow in the case of pregnancy discrimination. You can probably find it in your employee handbook if there is one. If that still doesn't work, contact the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC.gov, to find your local office. They'll be able to help you determine if you have a legitimate complaint. Remember to keep records of everything that'll bolster your claim, copies of emails, letters, a journal of events. This trail will also be helpful in case you ever need to contact an attorney. Chapter 8. The fourth month, approximately 14 to 17 weeks.
Finally, the beginning of the second trimester, which for most expectant moms is the most comfortable of the three. And with the arrival of this momentous milestone, one down, two to go, often comes some welcome changes. For one, most of the more pesky early pregnancy symptoms may be gradually easing up or even disappearing. That queasy cloud may be lifting, which means that food may actually smell and taste good for the first time in a long time. Your energy levels should be picking up, which means you'll finally be able to pick yourself up off the sofa, and your visits to the bathroom should be dropping off. And though your breasts will likely still be supersized, they're less likely to be super tender. Another change for the better, by the end of this month, the bulge in your lower abdomen may be looking less like a large lunch and more like a pregnant belly.
Your baby, the fourth month.
Week 14. Beginning in the second trimester, fetuses, like the children they'll eventually become, start growing at different paces, some faster than others, some more slowly. Despite the differences in growth rates, all babies follow the same developmental path in utero. This week, that path is leading your baby, who is about the size of your clenched fist, towards a straighter position as the neck gets longer and the head more erect. And on top of that cute little head, your baby might actually be sprouting some hair. Eyebrow hair is also filling in about now, as is body hair, called lanugo. Don't worry, it's not permanent. This downy coating of hair is there to keep your baby warm for now, like a furry blanket. As baby fat accumulates later on in your pregnancy, most of that hair will be shed, though some babies, especially those born early, still have a temporary fuzzy coating at birth. Week 15. Your baby, who measures approximately 4 inches this week and weighs around 2.5 ounces, is about the size of a pear and looking more and more like the baby you're picturing in your dreams. His or her ears are positioned properly on the sides of the head, they used to be in the neck, and the eyes are shifting from the sides of the head to the front of the face. By now, your baby has the coordination, strength, and smarts to wiggle his or her fingers and toes and even suck a thumb. But that's not all your baby can do. He or she can make breathing movements, suck and swallow, all in preparation for that big debut and life outside the womb. And though it's still unlikely that you'll be feeling any movements from your little one this week, your baby is certainly getting a workout, kicking, flexing, and moving those arms and legs. Week 16. With a whopping weight of anywhere from 3 to 4 ounces and a length, crown to rump, of 4 to 5 inches, your baby is growing up fast. Muscles are getting stronger. You'll start to feel movement in just a few weeks, especially the back muscles, enabling your little one to straighten out even more. Your baby-to-be is looking more baby-like, with a face that has eyes, complete with eyebrows and eyelashes, and ears in the right spots. What's more, those eyes are finally working. Yes, it's true. Your baby's eyes are making small side-to-side movements and can even perceive some light, though the eyelids are still sealed. Your baby is also becoming more sensitive to touch. In fact, he or she will squirm if you poke your belly, though you probably won't be able to feel those squirms just yet. Week 17. Take a look at your open hand. Your baby is about palm size now, with a crown to rump length of 5 inches and an approximate weight 5 or more ounces. Body fat is just beginning to form, baby's fat that is, though yours is probably forming pretty quickly these days too. But your little one is still quite skinny, with skin that is practically translucent. This week your baby is all about practice, practice, practice in preparation for birth. One important skill your baby is busy sharpening, sucking and swallowing to get ready for that first and second and third suckle at breast or bottle. Your baby's heart rate is regulated by the brain now, no more spontaneous beats, and clocks in at 140 to 150 beats per minute, roughly twice your own heart rate.
Your body, the fourth month.
Here are some symptoms you may experience this month, or may not experience since every pregnancy is different. Some of the symptoms may be continuing from last month, while others may be brand new. With the start of the second trimester, some symptoms may be tapering off, others intensifying. Physically, fatigue, decreasing urinary frequency, an end to, or a decrease in, nausea and vomiting. For a few women, morning sickness will continue. For a very few, it is just beginning. Constipation, heartburn, indigestion, flatulence, bloating. Continued breast enlargement, but usually decreased tenderness. Occasional headaches. Occasional lightheadedness or dizziness, particularly with sudden change of position. Nasal congestion and occasional nosebleeds, ear stuffiness. Sensitive gums that may bleed when you brush. Increased appetite. Mild swelling of ankles and feet and occasionally of hands and face. Varicose veins of legs or vulva. Hemorrhoids. Slight increase in vaginal discharge. fetal movement near the end of this month, but usually not this early, unless this is your second or subsequent pregnancy. Emotionally, mood swings, which may include irritability, irrationality, inexplicable weepiness, excitement, and or apprehension if you've started to feel and look pregnant at last, frustration at being in between. Your usual wardrobe doesn't fit anymore, but you're not looking pregnant enough for maternity clothes. A feeling you're not quite together. You're scattered, forgetful, drop things, have trouble concentrating.
Your body this month. Your uterus, now about the size of a small melon, has grown large enough to rise out of the pelvic cavity, and by the end of the month, you'll be able to feel the top of it around 2 inches below your belly button. If you don't know what you're feeling for, ask your practitioner for some pointers at your next visit. You'll probably begin to outgrow your regular clothes, though some moms can zip their way comfortably through 5 months or more without turning to maternity clothes, and that's normal too. If you'd like to see any of the illustrations from this chapter, you can download and print out a special PDF from the same Audible page where you purchased your audiobook. What you can expect at the 4th month checkup.
This month, you can expect your practitioner to check the following, though there may be variations depending on your particular needs and on your practitioner's style of practice. Weight and blood pressure. Urine for sugar and protein. Fetal heartbeat. Height of fundus, top of the uterus. Size of uterus by external palpation, feeling from the outside. Hands and feet for swelling and legs for varicose veins. Symptoms you've been experiencing, especially unusual ones. Questions or problems you want to discuss, have a list ready.
What you may be wondering about, the 4th month.
Dental problems.
Suddenly my gums bleed every time I brush and I think I have a cavity. Is it safe to have dental work done?
Smile, you're pregnant. But with so much of your attention understandably centered on your belly during pregnancy, it's easy to overlook your mouth until it starts screaming for equal time. For starters, pregnancy hormones are not kind to your gums, which, like your other mucous membranes, become swollen and inflamed and tend to bleed easily. Those same hormones also make gums more susceptible to plaque and bacteria, which can soon make matters worse in some moms-to-be, possibly leading to gingivitis, inflammation of the gums, and tooth decay. To keep your mouth happy, floss and brush regularly using a soft toothbrush and use toothpaste with fluoride for cavity protection. Brush up on your technique too, since brushing too aggressively can injure sensitive gums, leading to bleeding and even recession. Brushing your tongue with a tongue scraper or a separate toothbrush will also help combat bacteria while keeping your breath fresher. Ask your dentist to recommend a rinse to reduce bacteria and plaque, protecting your gums and your teeth. When you can't brush after eating, chew gum. Chewing sugarless gum increases the amount of saliva, which rinses the teeth, and if the gum's sweetened with xylitol, chewing can actually help prevent decay. Or nibble on a chunk of hard cheese. It decreases the acidity in your mouth, and it's acid that causes tooth decay. Watch what you eat, particularly between meals. Save sweets, especially sticky ones and even dried fruit or fruit leather, for times when you can brush soon after. Chow down on fruits and veggies high in vitamin C, which strengthens gums, reducing the possibility of bleeding. Also be sure to fill your calcium requirements daily. Calcium is needed throughout life to keep teeth strong and healthy, plus you'll be giving baby's growing teeth a boost too. See your dentist. Even if you're not having any noticeable dental discomfort, be sure to make an appointment with your dentist for a checkup and cleaning at least once during your 9 months, preferably earlier than later. The cleaning is important to remove plaque, which can not only increase the risk of cavities, but also make your gums more vulnerable. You may also need to schedule an appointment with the periodontist if you've had gum problems in the past. Stay away from any sealants or any cosmetic dental procedures like whitening until after delivery. Their topical fluoride treatment should be safe during pregnancy. Don't keep your pregnancy a secret, from the dentist, that is. Even if you haven't broken the news widely, your dentist and hygienist should both get the heads up before you open wide. Not only so they can take extra precautions with x-rays and treatment plans, but also because your gums may need to be handled with extra care. Something else you may want to share with them if pregnancy has revved up your gag reflex. Seeing your dentist or periodontist is especially important if you suspect a cavity or other tooth or gum trouble. Untreated gingivitis can develop into periodontitis, a more serious gum condition associated with a variety of pregnancy complications, such as preeclampsia. Decay that isn't cleaned up or other tooth issues that aren't tended to can also become a source of infection. And infection isn't good for you or your baby. What happens if major dental work becomes necessary during pregnancy? Luckily, in most dental procedures, a local anesthetic will suffice, and that's safe. A low dose of nitrous oxide, laughing gas, is also safe to use after the first trimester, but more serious sedation should be avoided during pregnancy. In some cases, it may be necessary to take an antibiotic before or after major dental work, so check with your practitioner.
Expecting x-rays? Routine dental x-rays and other routine x-rays or CT scans are usually postponed until after delivery, just to be on the extra safe side. But if putting off x-rays during pregnancy just isn't a good idea, the risk of having one is outweighed by the risk of not having one, most practitioners will greenlight the procedure. That's because the risks of x-rays during pregnancy are really very low and can be easily made even lower. Dental x-rays target your mouth, of course, which means the rays are directed far away from your uterus. What's more, a typical diagnostic x-ray of any kind rarely delivers more radiation than you'd get from spending a few days in the sun at the beach. Harm to a fetus occurs only at very high doses, doses you're extremely unlikely to ever be exposed to. Still, if you do need an x-ray during pregnancy, keep the following guidelines in mind. Always inform the doctor or dentist ordering the x-ray and the technician performing it that you're pregnant. Even if you're pretty sure they know, and even if you checked it off on any forms you filled out, have any necessary x-ray done in a licensed facility with well-trained technicians. The x-ray equipment should, when possible, be directed so that only the minimum area necessary is exposed to radiation. A lead apron will be used to shield your uterus, and a thyroid collar should protect your neck. Most important, if you had an x-ray before you found out you were pregnant, don't worry. A gum bump. If it's not one thing for your poor pregnant gums, it's another. Besides inflammation and sensitivity, canker sores are more common when you're expecting, and your gums might encounter other bumps as well, literally. If you notice a bump on your gum that bleeds when you brush, get it checked out. It's probably a pyogenic granuloma, also known as a pregnancy tumor, despite the fact that it's perfectly harmless, if often uncomfortable. These bumps usually regress on their own, but if it becomes really annoying, it can be removed by a dentist or doctor.
Breathlessness.
Sometimes I feel a little breathless. Is this normal?
Take a deep breath, if you can, and relax. Mild breathlessness is normal, and many pregnant women experience it beginning in the second trimester. And you can blame, what else, those pregnancy hormones for taking your breath away. Here's why. Those hormones stimulate the respiratory center to increase the frequency and depth of your breaths during pregnancy, which can give you that out-of-breath feeling after nothing more strenuous than a trip to the bathroom. They also swell the capillaries in the body, including those of the respiratory tract, and relax the muscles of the lungs and bronchial tubes, making those breaths seem even harder to catch. Your ever-growing uterus will also likely contribute to your breathlessness as pregnancy progresses, pushing up against your diaphragm as it swells, crowding your lungs, and making it more difficult for them to expand fully. Something else to look forward to. Fortunately, though, the mild breathlessness you're experiencing may make you feel uncomfortable, it doesn't affect your baby, who isn't breathing at all yet, but not to worry, is kept well stocked with oxygen through the placenta. If, however, you're feeling constantly breathless, mention it to your practitioner, who may want to test your iron levels. And if you're having a very hard time breathing, if your lips or fingertips seem to be turning bluish, or if you have chest pain and a rapid pulse, call your practitioner right away. Nasal stuffiness and nosebleeds.
My nose has been stuffed up a lot, and sometimes it starts bleeding randomly. Is that pregnancy related?
Your belly's not the only thing that's starting to swell these days. Thanks to high levels of estrogen and progesterone circulating in your body, which bring with them increased blood flow, the mucous membranes of your nose start to swell too and soften, much as the cervix does in preparation for childbirth. Those membranes also produce more mucus than ever with the intention of keeping infections and germs at bay. What's not so swell is the result, which your nose undoubtedly already knows, congestion and possibly even nosebleeds. Also not so swell, the stuffiness may only get worse as your pregnancy progresses. You may develop postnasal drip too, which in turn can occasionally cause coughing or gagging at night, as if you didn't have enough other things keeping you up or enough gagging going on. You can safely try saline sprays or rinses or sleep with a nasal strip like Breathe Right to ease nighttime stuffiness. A cool mist humidifier in your room may also help overcome the dryness associated with any congestion. Medications or antihistamine nasal sprays are usually not prescribed during pregnancy, but do ask your practitioner what he or she recommends. Some practitioners okay decongestants or steroid nasal sprays after the first trimester. Taking an extra 250 milligrams of vitamin C with your practitioner's okay, plus eating plenty of vitamin C-rich fruits and veggies, may help strengthen your capillaries and reduce the chances of bleeding. Sometimes a nosebleed will follow overly energetic nose blowing or very vigorous vomiting, so easy does it. To stem a nosebleed, sit or stand, leaning slightly forward rather than lying down or leaning backward. Using your thumb and forefinger, pinch the area just above your nostrils and below the bridge of your nose and hold for 5 minutes. Repeat if the bleeding continues. If the bleeding isn't controlled after 3 tries, or if the bleeding is frequent and heavy, call your practitioner. Snoring.
My husband tells me that I've been snoring lately. Is this another pregnancy symptom, hopefully a temporary one?
Men get the snoring blame in most households, and for good reason, since they're twice as likely to snore as women. That is, until pregnancy hormones invade the bedroom. Then all bets are off on who's disturbing whose sleep. Yes, that's right. You can add snoring to the list of unexpected and thankfully temporary symptoms of expecting. Usually pregnancy snoring is nothing to lose sleep over, though your bedmate may be losing plenty over it. The noisy nasal soundtrack that plays as you sleep is probably triggered by normal pregnancy stuffiness, which increases when you're lying down. Sleeping with a nasal strip on and a humidifier running can ease the congestion and help everyone sleep better, as can keeping your head well elevated with several pillows, which will also help with any heartburn you've been having, so win-win. Extra weight can also contribute to snoring, so make sure you aren't gaining too much. Rarely snoring can signal an elevated risk for gestational diabetes, or be a sign of sleep apnea, a condition in which breathing stops briefly during sleep. Since you're breathing for two, it's a good idea to mention your snoring to your practitioner at your next visit. Allergies.
My allergies seem to have gotten worse since I've been pregnant. My nose is runny all the time.
Expectant noses are stuffy noses, so it's possible that you're mistaking the normal, though uncomfortable, congestion of pregnancy for allergies. But it's also possible that pregnancy has aggravated your allergies, though some lucky expectant allergy sufferers, about a third, find a temporary respite from their symptoms during pregnancy. The less lucky, also about a third, find their symptoms get worse, and the rest, that final third, find their symptoms stay about the same. Since it sounds like you're among the less lucky third, you're probably itching and tearing and sneezing for relief. But before you join the rest of the other allergy sufferers in the antihistamine aisle, check with your practitioner to see what you can safely pull off the shelf or have filled at the pharmacy. Some antihistamines and other medications are safe for use in pregnancy, while others, which may or may not include your usual over-the-counter or prescription medication, may not be. Don't worry about any that you took before you knew you were pregnant or before you heard this. Allergy shots are considered safe for pregnant women who were on the receiving end of them before they conceived. Most allergists say it's not a good idea to start allergy shots during pregnancy because they can cause unexpected reactions. In general, however, the best approach to dealing with allergies in pregnancy is prevention, which can be worth a pound of tissues this season. Steering clear of what causes your allergies may also reduce the risk that your baby will develop allergies to those triggers. To ease the sneeze, try these tips. If pollens or other outdoor allergens trouble you, stay indoors in an air-conditioned and air-filtered environment as much as you can during your susceptible season. When you come indoors, wash your hands and face and change clothes to remove pollen. Outdoors, wear large curved sunglasses to keep pollens from floating into your eyes. If dust is the culprit, make sure someone else does the dusting and sweeping. How's that for a good excuse to get out of housekeeping? A vacuum cleaner, especially one with a HEPA filter, or a damp mop or sweeper, kicks up less dust than an ordinary broom, and a microfiber cloth will do better than a traditional feather duster. Stay away from attics, basements, and other musty places. If animals bring on allergy attacks, keep your distance from cats and dogs. And of course, if your own pet is suddenly triggering an allergic response, try to keep one or more areas in your home, particularly your bedroom, pet-free. And this goes with sleeping and snoring.
Snooze or lose. Are pregnancy hormones, or that growing belly, getting between you and a good night's sleep? Sleep problems are common in pregnancy, and while insomnia may be good preparation for the sleepless nights that lie ahead once your baby arrives, you're likely eager to catch some expectant Z's while you can. Before turning to over-the-counter or prescribed sleep aids, however, talk to your practitioner. He or she may have other suggestions to help summon the Sandman. Breathing easier with asthma. Being pregnant can leave you breathless, literally, once your growing uterus starts crowding out your diaphragm. But what if you're pregnant, breathless, and asthmatic, too? While it's true that poorly controlled severe asthma does put a pregnancy at somewhat higher risk for complications, such as preterm delivery, low birth weight, preeclampsia, or postpartum depression, this risk can be almost completely eliminated. In fact, if you're under close, expert medical supervision by a team that includes your OB, your internist, and/or your asthma doctor, and you keep your asthma well controlled, your chances of having a normal pregnancy and a healthy baby are about as good as any mama's, which means you can breathe a little easier now. You and your doctors may need to take a fresh look at the medications you're taking for your asthma. In general, inhaled medications like budesonide appear to be safer than oral meds. Since you're breathing for two now, getting enough oxygen is doubly important. Treating an asthma attack promptly with prescribed medication, usually albuterol, will help ensure your baby isn't shortchanged on oxygen. Since an asthma attack may trigger early uterine contractions, be sure to call your doctor or head for the nearest emergency room if your rescue inhaler doesn't help. Happily, any contractions that are triggered by an attack will usually stop when the attack does, which is why it's so important to stop it quickly. When it comes to labor and delivery, yours is likely to be pretty much like other moms. Though if your asthma has been serious enough to require oral steroids or cortisone-type medications, you may also require IV steroids to help you handle the added stress of childbirth. Though well-controlled asthma has only a minimal effect on pregnancy, pregnancy can have an effect on asthma. but the effect varies from expectant mom to expectant mom. For about a third of pregnant asthmatics, the effect is positive. Their asthma improves. For another third, their condition stays about the same. For the remaining third, usually those with the most severe form of the disease, the asthma worsens. Happily, no matter what pregnancy does to your asthma, your chances of having a healthy, safe pregnancy with well-controlled asthma are excellent. Peanuts for your little peanut? It's as American as the sandwich bread it's spread on. Plus, it makes a convenient and wholesome snack. But is peanut butter safe for the little peanut you're feeding in utero? Will eating it now cause your peanut to have a peanut allergy later? Good news. The latest research suggests that eating peanuts while pregnant not only doesn't trigger peanut and other allergies in babies-to-be, but it may actually prevent them. So as long as you're not personally allergic to peanuts, there's no need to skip the Skippy. And maybe more reason than ever to reach for it. Ditto for dairy products or other highly allergenic foods. If you're not allergic to them yourself, in which case you'd clearly want to steer clear, there's no reason to avoid any allergenic foods during pregnancy. Eating them will not trigger allergies in your little one. That said, if you yourself have ever suffered from allergies, speak to your practitioner and an allergist about whether you should think about restricting your diet in any way while you're pregnant and/or breastfeeding. The recommendations may be slightly different for you.
Vaginal discharge.
I've noticed a slight vaginal discharge that's thin and whitish. Does this mean I have an infection?
A thin, milky, mild-smelling discharge, known in the OB business as leucorrhea, is normal throughout pregnancy. Its purpose is noble, to protect the birth canal from infection and maintain a healthy balance of bacteria in the vagina. Unfortunately, in achieving its noble purpose, leucorrhea can make a mess of your underwear. Because it increases as pregnancy progresses and may become quite heavy, you may be more comfortable wearing panty liners during the last trimester. Don't use tampons, which could introduce unwanted germs into the vagina. Though it might make you feel a little icky and sticky, or possibly be a tad of a turnoff during oral sex, this discharge is nothing to worry about. Just keep yourself clean, daily showers or baths, and dry. Choose panties with breathable cotton liners. One thing you don't need to do and shouldn't, douche. Douching upsets the normal balance of microorganisms in the vagina and can lead to bacterial vaginosis, aka BV. You also don't need feminine vaginal wipes since the vagina does a pretty good job of keeping itself clean. If you really can't live without that fresh feeling, be sure to choose wipes that are pH safe and free of alcohol and chemicals. Changing the pH of your natural juices could increase the risk of infection. If you notice any unusual vaginal odors, fishy smelling, for instance, gray or green discharge, irritation, burning,